everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s Heartlink Show. And as I connect to as many hearts as possible, we are creating more freedom, light, and love, one interview at a time. My programs will bring you insights into the great awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach 2012. I'll be keeping you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing leading-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual realms. Stay tuned for the next hour as I speak with Ruth Gould Goodman, who has written the Sacred Book of You. I'm looking forward to it, the Lost Teachings of the Deep Feminine. But first, I'd like to introduce myself, and I am Carrie L., and I am a transformational counselor, a coach, and educator. And at the Heartlink Institute, I train others to be counselors and life coaches. So go to my website at heartlinkinstitute.com and learn more about my counseling practice and classes. Also, you can purchase the oracle I created called the Crop Circle Cards. And that's also on my website at heartlinkinstitute.com. And let's just take a deep breath now. And let sacred love flow through you now. And the blessing of the day comes from the Gayatri Prayer. Let us focus on that effulgent light from which the whole universe is protected. May this inner sun enlighten our minds and hearts, and may we awaken as that light. Well, good things are coming your way, and we have a marvelous guest. I just learned about Ruth Gould Goodman, and she is the author of The Sacred Book of You, and I just read it, and it unveils lost teachings of the deep feminine. So I'm so glad to have her on my show. She's a teacher of conscious embodiment and utilizes the expressive capacity of the breath, voice, and movement to help people recognize their own mastery. And welcome, Ruth. How are you?
I am just great, Cariel, and I just want to thank you for that beautiful, beautiful prayer and that remembering to breathe.
I have to remind myself. I get so carried away and excited sometimes, and breath is important. And
you're all the joy.
I do, yeah. And thank you for writing this book. Again, it's so powerful. And these are powerful times that we're living in. Of course, we just elected a new president. And so we might even talk about that a little bit today. I feel like we're on a roller coaster ride. Anyway, you expressed some very powerful points in your book, but first, please tell us about yourself. How did you come by all this information?
It's a story that's been told by many. It is my own fragmentation from truth, the pain that I experienced in that fragmentation, the journey I went on to try to heal myself. You know, although I didn't have cancer and I didn't have diabetes, some obvious illness, nor did I have diagnosable mental disease, I had psychological, spiritual fractures in my being that were excruciating. And it's sometimes hard to be almost normal and not quite, because you can't quite put your finger on it, and your life doesn't work. And you're obsessing and compulsing around things, and you don't understand, you know, why, even though I set this intention or that intention, why can't I just do what I want to do? And there are these things within you that you know, sabotage everything you try. Well, I feel like my story was like that. I had a 16-year history as a bulimic. I had an addiction to, love, seeking love relationships from men, and many other kinds of self-esteem issues that corroded my capacity to be in joy and to be fulfilling my deeper promise or dream of being here. And my life has been a journey to heal that. And the way that I healed it has been very interesting, because although I went to many teachers and learned a lot of things, in some ways I never quite got the answer until I began to enter my own body and explore. And since I have a connection to dance, I have a connection to going into my body and feeling joy, even when I was in the midst of the worst, depressions or fractures, somehow if music played, I'd be dancing. So I had this connection to dance, and I began to really understand that my body was made from another level of being than the part of me that was trying to get myself out of this predicament, and that I had grown an incredible body from an egg to a zygote, and I decided I wanted to get to know the level of my being that had actually caused this development, this growth of my physical body, and I began to listen to it. And at that moment was when my real healing started to happen, when I began to realize that there was an intelligence functioning through me that was me. And even it began to be that even the symptoms I was having and the pain I was having, I began to realize were not things to be gotten rid of, but they were intelligent signals arising from the depth of my being that were attempting to get my attention, to redirect the way I was formatting myself, the way I was creating myself. And I began to honor and respect these impulses, and lo and behold, healing began to happen. And I realized that this is true for everybody, that we all are a sacred text, and we all have to come back to ourselves and the sovereignty of our being in order to really heal.
Wonderful. You know, reading this book brought up so many memories of my own. and of course, I don't know if you know, but I was a school psychologist for approximately 10 years.
Mm.
And I worked in, with children, and I could certainly relate to their being dissociated from their bodies because of my own pain and my own dissociation early on in my childhood. And that the schools really are not addressing this at all. Just barely. Oh, let's put it this way. You know, we used to have phys ed, and I don't even know if that's it anymore. Maybe in some school districts it is. But they're inching out these very important parts that teaching aspects that help children to get in their bodies. And certainly the creative aspects are being also taken away, like art programs and music programs and that sort of thing. They're the first to go when there's major cutbacks. So, here we're talking about the right brain of the person and how essential that part of the brain is to function and to become more whole brain beings and not just be in our left brain. And you just brought it out in such a beautiful articulate manner how you explored that whole aspect of you that got cut off. And I recommend people check this book out if you're feeling cut off from that aspect of your right brain. And the culture is not supporting that because you got me back in my body. And I bet you can get a whole lot of people back in their bodies because we need to be connected in order to heal. You can't heal when you're so disconnected. And anyway, so I guess my question is, what's the first thing that you want to tell people about self-healing?
First of all, it's right in front of your nose. But, and it's so easy, it's breathtaking. But, it's you know, the Sufis have a saying, the secret protects itself. So it's as if you have any agenda or any thought that you want to perfect yourself or get better or somehow make yourself something that you are not, that intention in entering yourself will keep you away from really being with yourself. So there's a way to enter that has to do with just leading your mind back to experience that you are alive. And in that, there's a recognition of the awesome miraculousness of I'm alive. And that this breath, this one breath, is amazing. And the moment that you begin to not take this for granted, the moment that, you know, I can say I, the moment I stop taking the fact of my existence for granted and I begin to really understand that there's a creativity going on here that's as miraculous as any creativity that is happening anywhere, that is the moment that I begin to shift my relationship with myself and begin to enter the system directly, and I can begin to heal because at that moment I am recognizing that I'm the author of everything that is happening to me. And that recognition is, I feel like, it's subtle and it's complex and it's simple at the same time.
It's forcing one to take responsibility for the creation of their lives.
Pardon?
It's forcing people to take responsibility for their creation. That they,
yes.
it is their responsibility.
Yes.
They can't blame somebody else.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The engagement has to become so neutral. So it's as if you just recognize suddenly that what's in front of you is a reflection of what is your relationship with your own deepest creativity within you. And so there's nothing to change. There's nothing to do except for to recognize that I am creating mirrors on the outside of me that reflect back my relationship to my own deepest spiritual stream, creative stream within me. And you know, once you begin to recognize that the things outside of you are mirrors for the relationship within yourself, of your individual, the individual focus of your attention with the part of you that is streaming, we'll call it cosmic consciousness, okay? And what your relationship to this cosmic consciousness is. And to me, I don't use the word cosmic consciousness very often. I use the words, the unformed, vast potential of existence, that we each have an interface with this. And
mm-hmm.
you know,
I loved your term, the informed, and that birthing.
Yeah, and it gives this infinite potential. That's like what the quantum physicists talk about. You know, many people think about this as an abstraction that they read about in books, but they're not quite understanding that they are it, and they have within them an aspect that is infinite potential, unformed, infinite possibility, and that there's a relationship that their individual mind has with this. And depending on what the relationship is going to define whether you are living in fear or love.
That relationship is so essential, isn't it?
Yes.
And we get cut off from that relationship. You know, I'm sorry, I think we have skipped a step, I just wanted to get right into the healing, but maybe what we should do is use an example of a wound to help people understand more about how then to replug in and I love the way you talk about the on and off switch of our being, you know, plugged into source is what amounts to.
Yes.
But
yes.
What's an example? Now, you gave some powerful examples in your own life. Would you mind giving an example of a wound that you healed?
Sure. The one of the biggest wounds in me was the sense of not being recognized. I would cringe. I would get so angry because I would feel like I'd be with people and I was invisible and nobody would see me. And no matter what I would do, no matter what I would say, I would feel that I was not being recognized. Mm. And because of the training that I had finally created for myself to recognize that whatever is going on inside of me is my wiring. So I said to myself one day after being, it happened in a yoga class, you know, and I realized that I was getting really angry at the teacher for not recognizing me. And I said, okay, I got to go in. And so I went inside to that place within my body. And part of the technology that I have understood, my body's taught me, is that there's usually a wiring that's very encoded with a story. And if you go to the old story, to the old pain, you're going to go to something that you're not going to be able to transform because the wiring of the old story, which is that you simply are not good enough, you are not worthy of being seen or heard, shut up, you're a little kid, you know, forget it. All those wirings, which were excruciating to me as a child, come online immediately, and there's an immediate defensive pattern that comes up.
It's triggered, yeah.
Yes. So what I began to understand that I had to do was go to the sensations of the energetic pattern in my body to take in the information, not as a story of rejection, invisibility, or stuff like that, but as a sense of contraction, stagnation, a sense of coagulated energy within my body that I would begin to just let myself feel. As I would let myself feel it, I would begin to create a context for it, and the context was the rest of my energy system, the rest of my body. I had a mouth and I had saliva, I had eyes, I had, you know, my whole digestive tract, my anus to my mouth, my sexuality. So this pattern lived within the context of my whole system. And so what I would do is immediately it would be like being in a stream where there was eddies and rivulets and an area where there was a bunch of leaves caught, you know, in a something that was not being able to move. And so the charge of the old story was taken off of it. And what was there was simply the pattern that was created by the old story. And so what I would do is I'd invite the energy to find its way to its next evolution. And what is interesting about this, Kariel, is that in order to do this, you have to understand something about life itself. Because this is what allowed me to do this, is that at a certain point, I felt like I received an initiation. And the initiation was that life is exquisitely intelligent and wants nothing more than to be free, to be itself in its highest expression.
So these, pure energy, you call
yes,
it.
Yes, and so these things that were happening in my body were life that wanted to be free. I didn't have to make it do something. All I had to do was create an open field, a compassionate field, for it to begin to heal itself.
And non-judgmental.
Non-judgmental. Just an open space. And so that space was the whole system of my physical body for this energy to find its way. And what I would find over and over and over was that I would receive a teaching. For example, this desire for recognition took me to such a new place, because when I went into it, when I really went into this desire for recognition, I, as energy, I realized that it was with me for a long, long time. And all of a sudden, I began to realize that this desire for recognition was deeper than my individual life, actually. And I began to realize that this desire for recognition was actually, it's almost hard to say, but it was the impulse that was creating the whole expression of existence. You know, that inside of little old me was this desire to recognize itself. And I realized, oh my God, whatever it is that has created everything has wanted to evolve a consciousness that was individuated enough to be able to look upon itself and enjoy it. And that seed was inside of me, and that I was twisting it because I had not received the recognition from my family, because they were unable to do that because they had not received it. And this lineage of not having been recognized, I imagine being at least 5,000 years old, that finally it was within me to recognize that this recognition, this desire for recognition, was actually the seed of the capacity to recognize that the divinity of my own being is also the divinity that lives outside of me, and that I, once I recognize it within myself, have the capacity to recognize it outside of myself, and that I fulfill an imperative in a way by igniting within me that I thought was, you know, had to do with self-esteem. It had to do with, you know, not liking myself. No, it was deeper than that. It was literally the God force or the divine force, that is giving expression to everything which is within me, wanting me to arrive at an enlightened individuation that can really be joyful and take in creation and celebrate creation within me and outside of me.
So we're being compelled by the source, regardless of whether we think of it as trauma or not.
Yes. It's all about that. I believe that with all my heart and soul. And I feel like the moment we begin to relate to it at that level, we stop thinking of ourselves as needing to change or heal ourselves, and we realize that, oh my God, this is activating me so that I can rework my consciousness to be in deeper alignment with truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, there's so many powerful passages, but along these lines you say, pain is the voice of my soul showing me the way to freedom,
uh-huh.
which is what you just said in another way. And and that if we pay attention, now, the interesting thing is our all stories are embedded, you say, with traumatic trauma, basically. And we need to acknowledge that. We can't deny that, in other words, and just sweep it under the rug. Otherwise, it just gets even more painful.
Yes.
But by acknowledging it, what happens? We can change the story?
You know, this is really interesting. And this is one of the things that really helped me so much once I tracked this. And a lot of this was tracked in states of meditation and movement meditations. But what goes on is that we have aspects of our brain that function very, very quickly around trauma because it's trying to protect us from, it's a survival instinct, and it bypasses our frontal lobe. And it goes to parts of the brain, some of the parts are called the hippocampus and the amygdala, which have to do with memory and intensity. And so as soon as we get provoked by an old story that's traumatic, these functions come on and they activate neural pathways that are much faster than our thought process. You know, if you put your hand on a stove, it's like, you know, you just pull it away. You don't think. The trauma activates neural pathways like that.
It's automatic,
So if you don't have, if you're trying to think your way out of a trauma, it's never going to work. The pathway of the trauma is too fast.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is redirect your attention out of the old story to the sensations in your body, to take in the effect of that old story as a present moment experience of energetic activation. So the moment that you do that, you have gone underneath the trauma, the story that has made you activate the trauma.
Do you have to clear your field, your energy field, or
nope?
So it's not about imagining and thinking that you're clear or balanced.
No. You just simply redirect your attention from the thinking to tasting, feeling, listening, sensing. And you go to the body. You go right to the body because the body will allow you to come into the present moment. In the present moment, your trauma story does not live.
Well, you're in your essential nature. Is that it?
You're
plugging in at that point.
You're in the present moment. You're just an energetic experience.
Well, how do we become this experience? I mean, you give some wonderful exercises because, you know, this may just be hard to comprehend until we get real specifics on how to do this.
Yes. Well, one of the exercises I talk about is, first of all, using... You know, I can talk about the bulimia as a specific and the act of, having a desire to eat food that I don't need as a way to mask the arising of energy within me that's painful.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
And again, back to the concept that it's not about the, when you say painful, it's forgetting the truth of your essential nature. That's really the pain.
Yes. Yes.
So it's reminding you of that that is painful.
Yes. Yes.
And I know that, and that resonated so much with me, and I just want to bring that home to people.
Mm-hmm.
That it's, you know, we are dealing with a forgotten, cut off part of ourselves that we are continually going to seek after. And until we get it, we're going to be in pain.
You have understood my message. Thank you.
It's a big message.
It's
so powerful. And you can say it a number of different ways than you did. And it's just this wonderful understanding that we are it. And to connect to that life force within us. It may be initially feeling like it's painful, but that's just because we distorted it. We distorted our inner world.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, I'm thinking that in order to give our listeners a more graphic understanding, I'm going to go to one of my biggest teachers, and that was my bulimia, which was intense. You know, first of all, I hated my body. And then I was caught in this loop of wanting to eat as a way of assuaging the intense fracturing that I felt for hating myself so much that I'd learned to do. And I would seek after food, and then I'd become terrified that I'd eaten, and I would have the impulse to purge myself, and I would do that. This went on and on and on and on. I was afraid to be alone with myself. So there was a time where I had finally gotten my life to a more calm place, and I was not actively being bulimic, but the bulimia was still living within me. And I remember, I write about this in the book, I remember sitting on the couch and having the impulse to eat something. And I think what I was doing was not dealing with my creativity. My creativity was coming up, and I couldn't direct it, and there was an impulse to eat. And I went over to these large wooden closets that I had in my kitchen, and I stood in front of it, and there was a bag of crackers there. I wanted to eat that bag of crackers, and I thought to myself, what power am I giving these crackers that I want to consume within me? When I digested that thought, I realized that I had imagined that these crackers in some way were going to satisfy me and give me a sense of love. Then I asked the next question. What is it inside of me that is needing for me to consume something outside of me to fill it? And my attention went to my body, and I felt this ache in my solar plexus. And so instead of putting the cracker in my mouth, I imagined the love that I imagined in that cracker, the sense of satisfaction. I literally breathed that satisfaction back to that place within me that I was actually creating as a fractured void within myself, that I didn't have this within me. And what immediately happened was I had no desire for the crackers. It dissolved, it disappeared, because I had brought my attention back home. And up until that moment, I had been trying to plug into something external to myself to fulfill me. And I brought my attention, I breathed it back to myself, and I, by the movement of my own mind and my own attention, intention, and my intention to return back to myself the love that I was imagining living outside of myself, I freed myself from the impulse. and I closed the closet and walked away. What was very interesting was within three steps, I had such a habit of creating myself in this fractured way that I forgot. And I had created myself back into longing for myself from the outside. And I found myself in front of the closet there looking at the crackers. And I did the same thing. I understood crackers are a substitute for an imaginary love and fulfillment that I am projecting external to myself. I'm going to breathe that back to this place within me that feels so fractured and so unloved. The moment it is brought back to my center, and it's with my own intention, my own coming back home, bringing my mind back to my own center, I am free of the impulse. I am clear. I went and did this over and over. I couldn't believe it. It was like being a ghost, you know, because the moment I would forget, the old pattern would establish itself, the pattern of seeking myself outside myself. Mm. Then there was the pulling it back, and I would once again establish my essential sovereignty and wholeness, and I would be free. And what I know is that there is a building of a muscle to a muscle of consciousness and intention that we have to work it to, you know, create these ways of being so that they begin to feel like who we know ourselves to be instead of these fractured ways that we have become habituated to.
Well, and I just want to reinforce what you just said to my audience and write these words down. Whatever I seek from outside myself, I now create within myself. Yes. That's from your exercise in your book, and that's a powerful statement. Very, very powerful.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And thank you. And, you know, there's also this thing of realizing that we create exactly what we're structuring.
Mm.
You know, that I have the story of my ex...
oh, I love that. Yeah, tell
husband. And who, you know, my first husband was...
We can all relate to something like that.
Yes. He wound up being gay, and he left me for another man. And I went through obsession, you know, because I married him, and he was my husband, and he didn't want anything to do with me. He had come to an understanding of what he wanted, and it had nothing to do with me. And I had to deal with this longing and this obsession, and after many years of chewing on this, I realized that my ex was my perfect mirror of how I had been programmed to define love as longing and never being satisfied, and that I was actually exactly recapitulating the way that I had been taught to know love by my parents, who worked 18 hours a day and came home very, very angry and frustrated and could not take in their children.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You were emotionally abandoned.
I was emotionally abandoned. And they didn't mean to do it.
I mean, that is probably the biggest issue that people have right there. You know, you know, seriously, I deal with abandonment all the time. You really, again, brought it home with that inquiry into obsession exercise and how to really clear yourself of that.
Yeah, you know, it comes from recognizing, oh my, I am a master here. I've created my exact mirror of my primary relationship to love that was programmed into me. I am masterfully doing this. But you see, once I could recognize that I was masterfully creating mirrors for what I had learned to be reality, at that very moment, I can choose to do something else.
That's the beauty of this. It's so powerful. And I love you the way you describe bending the metal like Superman.
I know.
Describe that.
I realized it after I wrote as a superwoman, you know. But it really feel like, you know, that kind of bending metal from this kind of mythic being, you know.
Well, we're leaking, you know, if we allow our energy to leak, to drain us, because we're sending all of our love energy off to this external object that's not receiving it, it's about time that we started to bend it back towards ourselves.
Like it back into your own wholeness and recognize this holographic quantum truth that the center is everywhere, and only you can bring yourself back to center and be center and express center. And until you are there, you are in fragmentation and vulnerable to fear, in pain. And the moment you bring yourself back to yourself, you have recapitulated the wholeness of the universe once again.
Mm-hmm. Describe what you mean by the call to love.
Say that again?
You talk about the call to love.
Oh, that's near the beginning of the book.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, this is a very, I think, this is what helped me begin to trust the process, is that, you know, because of this obsessive compulsive seeking love outside of myself, I had, you know, really had a very small definition of love, and it had to do with me getting somebody to love me. And I began to understand somehow that love is an is, that love is the empty space. And when we talk about this empty potential energy, this dark force, that the unformed, this womb space that we interface with, its vibration is love. And that love is a matrix. It's invisible to our eyes, but its vibration and frequency is love. And it is the space that holds the planets in their exact harmonic relationship. So the vibrations of sound that create the intervals between the planets are, you know, exactly harmonics of each other. It is the harmonics that hold our cellular structure in place, and the empty spaces between ourselves is love. And this love is the substrate that is distilled into our particular physical manifestation. And so when we begin to taste love as not something that we seek, but something that we are, because not because we're special, but because this is the nature of existence and we're part of existence, and this love is everywhere. It's like closing your eyes and taking one simple breath without agenda, and there is love. There is sweet, delicious, simple love. And there's this immediate fulfillment and satisfaction in recognition of that, because what it does is it replaces you in a universe in which the sense of connectedness is finally available to you.
And it's user-friendly.
Yes, user-friendly. You're not alone. You know, that way that we define ourselves, that is, you know, the rugged individual, kind of creates a chasm between ourselves and this very subtle vibrational knowledge. And we have to, you know, connect with it first within ourselves to know it outside of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I know many people try to find love in some person out there, and they keep, you know, leaving the matrix within to find it, and what they wind up doing is creating reflections of that not relationship. To get them to come back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's calling you back. It's calling you to bring your attention, you know? And one of the things that I know that I learned from was the repeated, very, very flawed relationships that I had with men, in which I kept seeking love. And all these relationships always wound up with me in a corner crying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this would go on and on and on and on. But, you know, at first it would happen in a 7-year interval, then a 3-year interval, then a 1-year, then a 3-month, then a 2-week. And it began to happen faster and faster and faster. And I finally got to a place where I was bumping into myself because I was so spinning around in a small space that I had to recognize that it wasn't about another person. I was doing this. And it took me years. I mean, I was doing this work, I think, before a lot of these models were consciously out there in which to know this. So that these processes took me time, years, in fact, of, it, you know, experiencing myself to kind of get it. You know,
and you have used techniques like body movement and slow dance to make that interconnection.
Yeah.
Describe that, how powerful that is.
Oh, you see, our bodies are a teacher. We, you know, it's so obvious once you get out of your head that we are given bodies to know ourselves, that there's a feedback that's immediate, and also to meet the limitations of the physical universe that we have as physical expression. There's, an imperfect perfection that the physical body is. But by entering into the body, that there's a capacity to begin to meet your own mind and understand how you're modulating frequencies and how you are projecting intentions and how you're creating connections with yourself and the space around you or another being. So that especially when you slow down movement, you have to really stop your habitual interaction and habitual, non-perceived ways of doing things. And so you begin to really look at, oh, I am doing this, and I am doing that, and I'm doing this. And so you begin to recognize that there are relationships with everything that you have unconsciously established. And the feedback is immediate. Like even the way that you relate to gravity. You know, some people are pulling up from gravity and they're trying to resist gravity and resist their body. And they're trying to be light. And what I have, my body taught me this, is that when I really let myself drop into gravity and feel my weight and feel my physicality and, you know, really allow that rootedness to be there, simultaneously the energies of the earth surge up through me and I'm immediately plugged into heaven. And there's a circulation that goes on in which I'm no longer a two-dimensional flat space. I become a multi-dimensional roundness.
And I can't help but think of the Kundalini when you talk about that. Are you familiar with the Kundalini, the concept of...
Yes, I am. I am. And, you know, I feel like that the Kundalini... this is something I think I it's hard for me to talk about it, but I have this particular thing because I feel for a long time I would define enlightenment as this rising of Kundalini, you know, in which you light bulbs that go on in your head.
That's only if you survive it.
But, you know,
it's interesting. It might be a state of enlightenment, but it's not necessarily permanent, and that's the trick.
You know, that's exactly. I realized that that defining enlightenment like this was keeping me away from a more accessible enlightenment that I call a feminine enlightenment, that is actually immediately available, which is an enlightenment it's a relational enlightenment, and it's the enlightenment that happens when that field of love becomes, that gentle field of love becomes opened in your heart and in your body, and you are in an ocean of love, and that you begin to recognize that love wherever you are and be in relationship with it. That's another kind of enlightenment that I feel is very accessible.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely appreciate you making a distinction between patriarchal and matriarchal.
Yeah.
And the whole concept of you have to breathe a certain way, a certain numbers, and that really was a turnoff for me when I was studying and doing these breathing techniques. And as you say, it's so much more dynamic, a process. And I love the way you describe breathing. And could you go into that
in terms of the
non-linear process you're talking about?
You know, it took so long to let go of all these established, this is what yoga is.
Rules.
This is the way it's supposed to be. And finally come into, you know, I don't know anything about my breath. I'm just going to sit here. And I am going to watch my breath and feel my body. And as I deconstructed breath more and more, I began to realize that there were ways that I would jump ahead of the breath in my mind. That it was difficult for me to really keep my attention to experience how breath interfaced with my physical body. But I began to track it, and what I would find is the moment that I was able to simply be with the unfolding of this algorithm of breath, and it's not a linear thing, it's an algorithm. So it expresses itself the way fractals express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So your mind has to let go. It's more complex than your logic. Mm-hmm. You can't keep up with it like that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let yourself be surrendered to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that I really did that, and my attention was with that experience of breath and letting myself just be with it, I immediately would go into a profound state, energetic state. And it was just available. It's right there. Because at that moment, I had truly become one with the cosmos. And it was done through my breath, not as an imposition on my breath, not by working my breath, but by being in a very gentle state of awe that my body could receive this breathing information, and that I was being breathed by cosmos.
Wonderful. That expresses it so well. Whew. Wow. You know, this is powerful information. I'm so glad that I've had you on my show. People, you've been listening to Ruth Gould Goodman, who has authored the sacred book of You, Unveiling Lost Teachings of the Deep Feminine. And you've developed this system called La Madre Yoga.
Uh-huh.
Want to tell people how they can find out more information and how to access your website?
Absolutely. Thank you, Carielle. Yes, my website is my name, www.ruthgouldgoodman.com. And also, they can buy my book off my website or from Amazon. I am teaching, and there are, you know, scheduled changes and developments that go on for the teaching. I have, at this point, there is thoughts of actually developing asking for people to come on board to do a documentary to see the effect of this work. And so anyone that's interested in that can get to me. They can actually call my number at 310-392-3612 if they're interested. I also do private sessions. I'm very, very adept at tracking with people energetically and helping them to rewire back to a state of wholeness and to do this very, very quickly. And it's very interesting because I feel this work happens fast, but then there's a need for reinforcement of this basic knowledge that once you get it, you get it. Mm-hmm. So if anyone's interested in that kind of work, in healing themselves with this, in this way, I'm here. Yeah,
excellent. Again, people, I just highly recommend you check out this book, The Sacred Book of You. Now, Ruth, can they order that on your website or Amazon, or where should they go?
Yes, they can order it on Amazon, The Sacred Book of You. And when you spell it, it's not Y-O-U, it's U. And that U is intentional. It is the chalice. It is the empty space that you fill with your understanding of how to hold yourself with that infinite potential.
Thank you, Ruth. Wow. Thank you so much. I'll have to have you back on my show.
Oh, I would love
to.
It's been a really joyful exploration. I have so enjoyed talking with you and our sharing. It's been very, very fulfilling and exciting.
Well, and people, you do check out my website, heartlinkinstitute.com. This is Carrie L's Heartlink Show. And I want to thank BBS Radio for allowing us to have shows like this that expand our consciousness. And listen next time when I will have Bruce Lipton on, who is Dr. Lipton, who will be speaking about the biology of belief. So I'm really excited about that. And please do check out also Heartlink Institute and its classes. And thank you for listening. I'm so glad we've been able to connect and broaden our horizons toward more freedom, light, and love. Have a great day. Bye-bye.